It's about 10 minutes into hour two, so we got a lot to do. We won't take any breaks other than the top of the hours. And as I promised yesterday and leading into the weekend, Ed Peters joins us. And Ed, known around, certainly around the contest circles, on the contest sites, as Fantini, known as Fantini 33 on Derby Trail for 15 plus years, and an overdue pleasure to get Ed on the show. Ed, thanks for doing this.
Oh, glad to be on, Steve.
Ed, first and foremost, we're going to talk about the Oaklawn playbacks from opening weekend, but let's talk about your contest experience again this year. I'm not even sure how many times you've made it to Vegas, and you put in a very good run. And you know, you're one of the players we track, and you know your rivals, know your name, and Pete and I talk about you regularly. Talk about how things went over the weekend.
Things went pretty well. It was an interesting weekend as far as the actual contest went, where you had some long prices come in and mandatory races at the very end, which, you know, anyone who's played in contests knows that that can really alter a leaderboard in a hurry, and it can eliminate a lot of work that people have done to get to the top in one or two fell swoops. You can shuffle back 20 or 30 places or move up 200 places, depending on how it shakes out. And unfortunately for me, this was a weekend where I was in a good position until some mandatory bombs came in really late, and it negated, you know, a day and a half worth of solid play. But, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Every once in a while, you know, you can be on the receiving end of some of that good fortune, and you just hope that it doesn't happen against you on the biggest stage. And that's the way I feel about how last weekend went. I was in a great position late on day two, and then it sort of unraveled, you know, with no fault of my own. It just played out that way.
Where did you end up after Saturday?
So at the end of Saturday, going into the Tampa mandatory, which was the race that involved the inquiry, going into that race, I was in 12th, but my second entry was like just off the cut line, and I was waiting to play. The Oaklawn race was getting ready to go off while they were doing the inquiry at Tampa on the mandatory race, which ultimately went to the 3-horse at 20-1. I played the 12-horse Street to Indy at Oaklawn on my second entry, which was fantastic. It's where I wanted to play it. And the 12-horse paid 56 and change. Like, it was a cap horse practically. And it moved my second entry into the top 30 in between mandatory races. So at one point, I was probably sitting 12th and 30th before a leaderboard update. Now, the unfortunate timing of it was, you know, half an hour after that, the Golden Gate mandatory goes off. And, of course, a 40-1 comes in, which moves countless people on by. So it's a little bit unlucky that the timing of the races were what they were, because had the cap horse and the mandatory come in prior to the Oaklawn race, I would have had that Oaklawn race on my lead ticket, and that one would have gone almost to 270.
Wow.
Which would have almost assuredly put me on the final table. But I put it on my backup ticket, which was fine because that was my plan all along. It just didn't quite jibe with how the races played out, you know, moving forward from that race. So, in many ways, it's not about you need to be lucky with your plays. You need to be confident with your plays. But sometimes it's just luck the way it shakes out around you, and there's nothing you can do, whether it be the timing of the races or, you know, as I'm sure you've heard Nick say many times, there are a lot of reverse routes going on. You know, people see you cheering for a 3-5 shot, and it's not because you have them. It's because you know that there are 40 people that have a long shot in the race, and you're just rooting against that. So it gets frenetic at the end of these tournaments when, you know, things start happening.
Well, and your first entry, you know, did cash. I mean, you ended up 54th, which was good for 11,500. The second entry also, I mean, in the top 25%, ends up at 146th. That was with 170.70, and the 54th place ticket, 210.90. This was your fifth NHC in 6 years. Only 2017 did you miss, and you've had two entries before.
I've had two entries before, and I've tried to juggle them differently, different years, trying to sort of figure out a certain strategy to use, because I know there's a lot of different ways you can play it. A lot of guys like to divvy out picks, you know, separately and sort of have a lead ticket and a backup ticket. But that's real risky business when you end up doing stuff like that, because you can end up zigging and zagging, and next thing you know, you're left with two tickets that did fine, but neither one of them did well enough to cash. Another school of thought is you play all of the optionals the same on both tickets, but you split up the mandatories so that you have one on one ticket and a different horse on another ticket. Since the mandatories are very important, you need to make sure you get those right. Having two entries certainly helps in that regard. In this year, I've tried all the different approaches, and this year I went back to square one, which was I just want to pick a lot of winners. And whatever tickets they end up on, they end up on, and I'm good with that. Once you start trying to, there's enough decisions to make between the handicapping, whether or not to use a horse at all, and then what ticket to put them on. You know, you're bound to make lots of wrong decisions, and it still should come down to, if you just pick enough winners, you should be in a good spot. And this year, I had no overlapping picks. $210 on one entry, 170 on the other entry. None of the picks overlapped. They were all separate. So with a zig or a zag, either way, you know, I could have had 260 on one and 110 on the other, which would have been a better result, but it's just how it shook out. So hopefully, you know, you can learn from it. And when they post all the picks, which I believe the NHC does, Steve, they will post everybody's plays for the whole weekend. There are lots of players whose picks I want to go look at, just because you can learn from the better players, you know, the Matisses and guys like Paul Sherman, and see what kind of plays they're making at what point in the contest, and, you know, where their score was at certain points. And if you can't learn from those guys, if you're trying to do it on your own, it becomes really difficult. So there are players out there with much more experience, and they're savvy and smart guys, that when the information is now becoming available, it's there for us to use. So that's my plan moving forward.
Ed Peters with us, and as you can hear, he's from New Hampshire. And Ed, the interest in the contest scene. Talk about your evolution as a player, and, you know, when you latched on and, you know, became intrigued enough to, you know, take it seriously, and, you know, very quickly you became, you know, one of the most visible players, you know, on the contest sites.
Well, I first heard about contests after listening to your show. I used to run promos for Derby Wars, and I'm like, you know what? Let me go try this out. Like, I like horse racing, and I certainly like competing, and it seemed like a natural fit. And when I went, I was thrilled to death to be able to get. At first, it started out as just action, so that you don't have to play cash on every race that you see, but yet you can be involved in an entire card, even on races that you don't necessarily have an opinion on. You have to put a pick in, so it gives you sort of an action sort of outlet. And when you start to learn about all the different major contests and how real the money is, it sort of you latch onto it. And you realize that if you're if your opinions are correct and your strategy is right, and that's another thing I think that a lot of people like about the contest is the gameplay strategy, which it's removed from the handicapping. It's another element that causes people to be attracted to it. And, I mean, who doesn't like a good strategy game, right?
No doubt. How do you recommend players? Because there was a lot of this on social media and emails, conversation that people, they listened, frankly, to the broadcast from Vegas, and what they immediately are curious about is how do they approach it, and what advice do you have for somebody that wants to wade in? I mean, join the tour, $50. That's number one. And then, there's horsetourneys.com, there's horseplayers.com. Then there's the on-site at racetracks near you. How do people wade into this action?
The first thing you got to do is pick up Pete Fornatel's book. The contest strategy book, I read it 3 or 4 different times. And just as a refresher, even though I've been playing in contests now for years, I still will find myself picking the book up and reading it. Because there's invaluable information in there about tournament strategy and exactly like you said, how to get started. There's a world now where, with online contests, you can play against 3 people, you can play against 5 people for very small money and just sort of get a feel. I'm talking games that cost $7, 5 person, winner take all gets $30 or something to that effect. And you can sort of get a feel for what types of horses. I mean, in head-to-head games, it's a little bit different. Short price horses have big value there. If you're playing against 100 people, if you're picking short price horses, you better have a lot of them, and it can evolve from there. But if you're new to it, you definitely want to start out on a smaller scale where you also want to have a stake in the game too. You can play, there are free contests you can play, but people I think have a tendency, like anything that's free, they get a little lackadaisical about it. So you don't put forth maybe enough time and effort into it. But if you have a few bucks involved in it, you're going to look at the races, and you're going to make handicapping decisions. You're going to put picks in, and you can sort of evolve from there. You can advance to 10-player games or the same number of player games, but for bigger cash increments. And before evolving to the live events are a totally different animal because of all the distractions involved between how many people, the noise. Everyone's got their opinions that they're sharing, and you hear people talking about different things, and it becomes very, not necessarily confusing, but there's a lot going on at a live tournament, and it's, you should really start on the online ones and sort of wade your way into those, and then move into the live ones.
Well, we will continue to, to beat the drum on this topic and give everybody ideas and report as the new season unfolds, as players come back from Vegas. I want you to talk, Ed, about one of the methods that you've developed, and that includes plays you made this weekend based on opening days of the Oaklawn meet, where we had a rain-slicked surface that produced just an undeniable bias. And a lot of people had to be aware of that, and yet they don't have the tools, or they don't necessarily make the effort required to take advantage of it. And you talked about it on Derby Trail well in advance of Vegas, and now we're seeing some of the fruits of that kind of work. And I really wanted you to explain to people that are fledgling players that want to be able to connect the dots as to how to take advantage of this. And you kind of have a template that is in fresh in people's minds, essentially. going back to January 24th, 25th, and 26th. Talk about what you saw and how you approached it.
So that opening weekend at Oaklawn, with it preceding the NHC and knowing what a big part of the NHC tournament that Oaklawn is, it yields big prices on a yearly basis. Anyone who's going to Vegas, it's important to follow a track like that. We see the New York courses all the time, the California Gulfstream. If you're a regular player, you're sort of in tune to those tracks. But Oaklawn is one that, if you can pick it up right from the get-go, which was January 24th, and at least watch the races on a daily basis. You don't have to play the races, but watch them. Get a feel for what trainers are coming in with live barns. It's in many ways, it's not a lot different than Saratoga, where they're coming from all different spots, and it can get confusing, and the races are very confusing. So what my goal ahead of time, and it is every year with Oaklawn, is to try to watch the replays chronologically, not sort of picking through running lines and going back and watching races, because that is a track that can get very quirky one way or the other. Sometimes it's nothing but deep, deep closes in the center of the track, and other times they're going to be just like January 24th was, where you see some of the experienced Oaklawn jockeys literally diving to the rail in mid-stretch, going six paths in, and then passing seven horses. And you just don't see, when you see stuff like that happening, it becomes very apparent what's going on in the track. Now, I didn't watch the races on opening day, but the following morning, when I say watching them chronologically, there's really no other way to watch them, right? I mean, watching them all in a row. So the next morning, I went through them, spent about 25 minutes and watched race one, race two, race three, and you can see in that short timeline where you're not distracted by other tracks and trying to figure out what to bet, and when you're just purely watching the races one after the other, you can see the bias develop. And it's not apparent at first, and sometimes it looks like a speed bias, and little by little you see it, and it's real obvious when you watch the races like that, when you, rather than picking and choosing replays, because the track, any track, will change throughout the day. And it was pretty obvious watching the races on opening day that any horse that was at any point wide on the track, especially the horses that are chasing the pace the whole way and they're wide on the track, they come back with shot comments like lack closing kick, four wide, no rally. When you go back and watch these races and understand that there was a bias, boy, they look really good when they come back. And they've been running one right after the other, and they've been outperforming their odds because on paper they look like they're coming out of, you know, bad races.
There's so many examples that it's scary, and not the least of which came even before we talk about NHC races that were really in the crosshairs. Yesterday, as it happens, I had one of the races all week I typically will print out a few to, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and into Friday to alert people to. And we got so busy, and of course we were a day behind having traveled Monday. So one of the races, though, that I had actually printed out and saved was yesterday's seventh, a 40 non-2 lifetime, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it. But here was one of those horses, Bullion, for Larry Jones. And in fact, Jones also won a featured race yesterday at Fairgrounds. Feels like things are going very well in the Jones barn in both New Orleans and at Hot Springs. But Bullion had run on the Saturday in the fourth race, finished fourth as the favorite, chasing the whole way. This was one of those two dead heat races where Victory Element and Miracle Hill ran 1-2. This was the Hobby Moquette dead heat, and Bullion basically was chasing them, having launched from the 10 hole, and went off as the near second choice. It was 5-2 and just second choice to favorite Nola Wynn. comes back yesterday and goes off at 12 to 1, pays 26.80.
And Nola Wynn was in that same race yesterday, Steve. And Nola Wynn looked like a winner turning for home and got run down in the final eighth by Bouillon. Nola, I think Nola Wynn maybe ran fourth or fifth in there, but Nola Wynn ran a pretty good race yesterday as well. Just wasn't winning one.
And also went off at 12 to 1.
Exactly. That's the big thing. These horses are going off at prices because their form looks spotty. A lot of them are coming into the Oaklawn meet off of layoffs anyway. So the last race before the layoff oftentimes isn't exactly a doozy. Then they show the race against the bias, which isn't a doozy, and it looks like they're spotty, and they just they continually, you know, and on the reverse end of that, there was, you know, there are horses that clearly were favored by the bias, and they've been dead play against, and they've all come back and regressed, every one of them.
This race, these two races, have identical conditions. These are non-winners of two I mean, this was a little higher value, 35,000, 40,000. They were coming out of races that was a $25,000 claimer. But Aquam, for instance, Aquam had been third in the dead heat race on the 25th. Aquam goes off at 3 to 1 as the second choice behind One for Richie. One for Richie was not in the race on the 25th, but there's just such an example here. Bouillon, it was right behind Aquam, five lengths and change. So that was in the race on the 25th. And yet, why, you know, at a glance, the public lets Bouillon go at 12 to 1. And they make Aquam the second choice at 3 to 1 because they were five lengths apart, ostensibly on the 25th. But in fact, Bouillon had a much tougher assignment leaving from the 10 hole and trying to, you know, chase home the dead heat winners. It was about what, 5-6 lengths behind the dead heat. But he was 5 or 6 lengths behind because of the conditions, not because of talent.
Right, not because of talent. It almost tells you how many lengths that bias is worth to horses that were traveling on the outside minimally. Even in the nightcap last night at Oaklawn, Steve, there were two horses that were coming out of the Lose Vaporizer race, where Lose Vaporizer ran away with the, you know, from the field. But the horse that ran second in there, Plumbago, was a horse that was on the turn in about the sixth pass and darted to the rail. Halfway down the stretch, darted to the rail and passed about six horses in four strides. Horses like Chief of Staff, who were out in the middle of the track spinning their wheels. Chief of Staff came back yesterday at 5-2 and got beat on the wire last night in the nightcap, but Plumbago was up the track. Plumbago was nowhere near. And they came out of the same race where Plumbago finished four lengths ahead of Chief of Staff. You flop it 2 weeks later, Chief of Staff beat Plumbago yesterday by 10 lengths.
How about some more from the weekend that that you cashed as part of the contest run?
Let's see. There was a 20-1 Sarah Smile?
Yeah. Sarah Smile was Sarah Street or whatever the hell it was. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, there was
Sarah C.
There was a handful of horses that didn't win, but they ran back. They ran back well at 10-1, 11-1. You know, and as far as, you know, even connecting the dots further, Steve, the horse that won the opener of the meet, race one, day one, was a horse that did come from off the pace, spent some time on the rail, but did angle out, took the whole turn wide, sweeping move, and won. Now, that horse came back and finished second at 11-1 while we were in Vegas. Just sort of like confirming that that horse not only was running well against the bias, that horse won against what ultimately was a bias. And came back, followed it up with, not surprisingly, another very good effort. You almost have to give extra credit to the horse that he second to.
Yep.
Right? That horse's effort now looks much better on paper as well moving forward, because you're talking about a horse that is six lengths, like, you know, you beat an 11-1. That horse is much better than that.
And in fact, there's something that happened. The horse we're talking about, a rival from Ingrid Mason, and our friend Dan Hart, before the meet started, he said, my favorite angle is Ingrid Mason the first few days of the meet. And sure enough, she ends up winning a couple, you know, right away. This one was 14, almost 15-1, paid 31.60 the first race of the meet. That was a 20 claimer. The race that a rival that he came back in was a starter allowance. So it's a big class raise, and he goes off at 10-1. And okay, I mean, Matru, you know, ran off and won on last Thursday at 5-2 as the second choice, looking for eight, ended up third in there and was the favorite. But if you understood that a rival deserved extra credit for his win opening day, then you match him up with two favorites. The triple, you know, triple paid $77 for a buck. I mean, this print, what I did was I printed out the first 3 days of the meet, all the charts, 24th, 25th, 26th, go through the charts. It's only 27 races. And read, as Ed suggested, even if you don't have time to watch all the replays, you can read the notes. And then just look the last 4 days, the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and then yesterday. So five cards. Look for the horses that ran, when it says last raced on the chart, 24, 25, 26. And you'll see it for yourself. And I mean, this, you know, for those that say you can't win, this is how you win. You have to work. You have to make an effort. This is how you have a template for success.
There are very few advantages left, Steve, and this is definitely one of them. And as the meet goes on, the horses are going to be showing up a little less frequently. You know, right now the problem is a lot of them are running into each other. So they're coming back. Like yesterday was a Bouillon and Nola Wynn come back in the same race. So you have to still make a decision on who you want. You can box them up. You can, you know, there was a trifecta last week where there was only three horses coming out of opening weekend. They ran 1, 2, 3 at 4-1, 6-1, and 14-1. Like, so, but as the meet goes on, there's still going to be opportunity. If you remember that opening weekend, then maybe they come back the second time on a class rise where they were simply overmatched, so that they have another race that doesn't look so good. Then they drop back to a more realistic spot. The opportunities are still going to present themselves as the meet goes on. You're just going to have to dig a little deeper, but they're going to be there, and it's all still going to be based on opening weekend.
Well, and you talk about the class moves, that race that you're talking about, that's the race that Night Ops was involved in, right?
Exactly, with Chris and Dave.
Yes.
Yep.
And when it comes to Sarah C, you're looking at the Oaklawn 7th, which was the Pippin, the first stake of the meet, or the second stake of the meet on the Saturday. Sarah C ends up, you know, beating 28 lengths. At 38-1, and drew outside, chased the pace. You know, granted, Woe and Nelly came from off the pace to win, but Sarah C still gets dirtied up, as you hear Andy Serling say, you know, dirtied up form. Now she comes back in an allowance of non-winners of one other than, and gets completely ignored, 20-1, pays $42 on Friday last week.
And that was a turning back, correct?
That was also turn back, yeah, from a mile to 6 furlongs. So dropping down and cutting back.
Dropping down and cutting back. And if you watch the race, she was an hour the best. She had to bully her way through. She was blocked for most of the stretch, and she still was she was an hour the best in there at 20-1. How often can you say a horse is an hour the best at 20-1?
You also had the Oaklawn first on Saturday the 8th, which was a claiming group of 8,000 claimers, horses that ran in the same third race on the third day of the meet. J.P. Gladys, Council Rules, and Can't Touch Me, they finished 9th, 2nd, and 3rd, respectively, on opening Sunday. They come back in the same meet. They run 1, 2, 3 at 15-2, 2-1, and 6-1, $90 try. So this is at all levels. It's not confined to stake and allowance horses. It's any level. Track condition supersedes everything else.
It really does, Steve. And, you know, to your point, a lot of, I know Silver Ride is an example of, I know you like Silver Ride on opening day. Silver Ride spent, you know, 90% of the race on the rail, only angled out late and won. Now, that's definitely an off-the-pace move, but it's still, when you go back under the thought process of, is this a rail bias? You know, you ask yourself the question, is it a rail bias? And then when you see where the winners are coming from off the pace, anything off the pace, still spent the vast majority of the race on the rail. And that's when you can really start to target horses. And, you know, you can make, sometimes you have to get a little creative and just trust it, because on paper, sometimes the horses don't look right. But at a certain point, you just have to play them and trust that what you're seeing is right.
For those that think, you know, we're cherry picking, let's talk about the seventh race on Saturday, where Street to Indy at 27-1 for Diodoro. This was that $56 horse you mentioned. Street to Indy, same thing. Street to Indy had been 10th in allowance conditions, going a mile and a 16th. That was in the fifth race on Sunday the 26th. Comes back on Saturday in the seventh and wins at 27-1 under Mohica. Same conditions, some of the same horses. Determinant actually is a horse that's an equivalent horse in both of these races. It's just unbelievable how many opportunities are being laid out there for anybody that makes the effort.
If 8-1 on 8-1 in the first race and came back the other day at 27-1. literally the same race except without the bias.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's incredible.
There's so many of them today, Steve. There's so many of them tomorrow. And there was one that I was looking for that I missed. There was a horse named Always that actually made a little move into the bias and was making up ground. It was the only horse I saw all weekend that was making up ground. And I said, I'm going to wait for this horse to come back. Well, the horse ran at Delta on February 1st and won and paid $8.20. I totally missed it. I'm looking at Oaklawn. This horse is off in Delta.
This is where your need for stable mail comes in, and putting a horse into the stable mail so you know where they're showing up.
Yeah, well, we'll catch him on the class rise coming back to Oaklawn.
There you go. Perfect. And one last note, that race that we mentioned, the Night Ops, that came back on Sunday on the 9th. This was in the 8th race. Night Ops wins, pays just $10. You think, okay, that's not such a great number. Really? Well, Sky Promise was 2nd at 6-1, and Chris and Dave, the horse that Ed obviously keyed on, 14-1. The three horses out of the same race that finished 3-4-6, chasing against the bias on the second day of the meet, they run 1-2-3 in here. How about a $264 trifecta for a buck? I mean, this is these are ROI builders and the kinds of opportunities. And even if you don't get another stretch like this the rest of the year, this period could be the difference between having a winning year and a losing year.
And I'll say this, you know, one more, you know, in closing, Steve, one of the things that I've been really bad at my whole life is overdoing it when I think I see a bias. So I've self-handicapped that on myself. I know that that's a weakness of mine. I used to jump to massive conclusions quickly on cards. Oh, it's inside. It's, you know, it's speed. It's closes. And I got burned a lot doing that. So now I'm very hesitant to anoint something as being a bias. But sometimes you just know what you see and you have to trust yourself. And my one thing I would say is, like, don't overdo it when you think there's a bias. You really have to let it play out. One other thing that you can be certain of is there's going to be an overcorrection at some point, either to the track or to the prices. When people start keying up, that second weekend when they came back was very closer friendly, in my opinion. And it's a classic overreaction to something that was the week before. So those things become predictable in their own right. But I've had a tendency over the years to overdo biases, but this one we're not overdoing. This one is a home run, and Steve, you're right. You have to get it while the getting's good. It almost feels like cheating, to be honest.
They're printing money. Easy game. What? Ed, give us one or two for today for everybody that are saying, okay, you guys got me convinced. Give me somebody that might benefit today, maybe.
Geez, you caught me off guard here because I'm sitting in my car. I don't have any PPs in front of me.
All right, I do. All right, I'm going to give. Here's one right off the just at a glance, and I haven't done the work on today's card. However, how about Tom Vance, who needs a win? He hasn't hit a board yet at the meet, but he's got earned, never given, in the first race today, coming out of the Saturday starter allowance, but happens to be dropping down in this spot and is 10-1 with Tyler Bayes. And, you know, at a glance, that's the kind of horse that you're looking for. Ran on opening day, ended up, ninth, beaten 12th, made a steady fade in the two path, chasing the pace. This is against a group of horses above his head, essentially, a starter allowance group. So this is the kind of template that we're looking for. You've also got one in here, Chicory Blue, for Jason Barkley. Jason, 0-8 at the meet. He's looking for a win. He ran on opening day in the first in that Ingrid Mason race, ended up sixth, beaten 15 lengths in a 20 claimer. So he's dropping a little bit. And, there's another potential horse from the opening weekend that running today in the first, but look for the any in them.
I believe we still run today too, Steve, if I'm not mistaken.
We like we still.
Right, we still run today, and I don't think we still will be a big price today because I have gone through all these races. Like I said, I just don't have everything in front of me. But a lot of times, it's not about even. They don't have to be big prices. They make great singles in pick threes and pick fours. If they're horses that are 4-1 that should be 8-5, you can go ahead and single them and just roll with it that way. You don't have to try to make a stack of cash in race. You can string these races together sometimes. I mean, yesterday you could have connected. Wouldn't have been difficult to connect the dots on a few pick threes. And today's card I know is full of them as well. So if they're short prices that come out of those races and they're in their playback, then, you just adjust your betting accordingly.
Well, and in fact, that Jason Barkley horse, that's, I just noticed, is Franklin Avenue, our friend Brian DiDonato and his partners. We'll just leave it at this, Ed. This was an overdue pleasure to get you in here, talk about your contest experience and evidence of what a savvy player you are. Everybody sees your name on those leaderboards, and they know they're in for a battle royale. It was great to see you in Vegas, and over the summer, maybe down the road, maybe Saratoga trip. Best wishes, continued success.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I enjoy talking about racing. You know that.
Well, and I will utilize your largesse again. I promise you that. This was overdue, and I think everybody coming away with, you know, really a real blueprint for how to approach the game. And it takes work. It takes notes. I've talked about our friend Smokin' Joe McKay. You know, Joe uses extensive race notes and listening to, you know, shows like this and other, you know, other places that analyze races, have horsemen on, have pundits on, and you know, you pick up tidbits, you record them. If you're using Timeform, if you're using Formulator, you put them in the sidebars. You have to make the effort, and you know, then when the opportunity is there, you strike like Ed has on a consistent basis, and he'll make a final table in coming years. One of those players. You won't be surprised when you're on the table. Ed, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good day.
You too. Ed Peters, everybody. And I would love to tell you that you could talk to Ed and reach Ed on social media, but he doesn't do it. He's no social media, I suppose, other than a derby trail. Or when you see him on the contest sites. So I really appreciate it. We'll talk to Ed again without fail. We're also going to talk to another Ed, Ed DeRosa. We got to get Ed in here before Ed's got an 11 o'clock timing constraint. So we'll get DeRosa on here now, and we'll jog Nick Tamaro into hour three. Nick said he's got the opportunity, so lots to come yet. We'll stay here as we wait for DeRosa and get his take. He was in Vegas, and see what plays that Ed's got for us. Ed, good morning. Maybe not. Well, if you can't, Case, if you can't get Ed, then you might as well go to Nick Tamaro. All right, because you got Ed now. Okay, he's got Ed now. Ed, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Doing well. Looking forward to an exciting weekend of racing.
Big time, and there is just no shortage. In fact, there's almost, even though there's just Fairgrounds as the prime, you know, big stake card, there's intense action everywhere you look, and I think people are going to be surprised when they start to shop for, you know, where they're going to play. There is no shortage. Before we talk about some ideas and some opinions, give us your Vegas recap. We never had a chance to have you sit down with us during the coverage.
Yeah, I thought the being in one room was a huge improvement to the experience. Not only, I can't really speak as a contest player, but my sense of the excitement in the room was heightened. But then just as, you know, a fan who was there and mingling and talking with people, I had a blast on Sunday, you know, sitting at a table with Gus and just playing the races. And, you know, that's actually a luxury for me. I'm often working, which, you know, obviously I enjoy my job and being at the track and playing along when I'm handicapping for work. But, you know, that was a rare, everyone had their PPs. I was pretty much done with, you know, what I was there for Brisnet, and just to, you know, get to hang out with Gus and some of his friends and Frank Angst and handicap some races and play along was a blast. And, you know, not that you couldn't do that at Treasure Island, but you know, it was a little more fractured with the separate rooms and not quite as big a space. And Eric did a great job dialing up the races right at the right time. So it was just a lot more excitement and for me a lot more fun to be with fellow horse players.
Yeah, I agreed. Agreed. It's a convention. You know, there's lots of convention. Whenever we go to Vegas, I guess the concrete convention is always now the same weekend. It used to be at one time it was the adult video news awards. That was that was across the street or behind the Treasure Island.
That was an overlap, right?
And so there's always a cavalcade of conventioneers going on.
World of Concrete, that's a big one.
It's big. It's apparently a huge show. I saw everybody walking around with these yellow bags, and all of a sudden I recognized the Sacrete logo. So somebody said, the concrete show's here. All right. Well, listen, we got concrete, that stamped concrete. Tina made this patio thing last year, and we love it. So I guess we were at some point that concrete convention found its way to our backyard.
Concrete's everywhere, Steve.
Yes, it is. You can't deny its versatility and functionality. And let's dive into the weekend. And I don't know if you want to slip in a Nadal and a Independence Hall / Sol Volante assessment or anything out of the Derby future wager as well. But let's get your ideas and postscript as well as opinions.
Yeah, as far as last week, 8-1, which I'm sure, after he won the San Vicente, since that race was after the pool closed, his backers were happier than they would have been had he not won. But, still waiting to see a number. And, I realize it's Baffert, and we know he's going to likely improve, and we still haven't seen him at two turns. But, Brisnet and Beyer, sort of an agreement that, yeah, it's a good number, but improvement's going to be needed there. And then the Ragusan especially wasn't in the same zip code of what we've seen from the Breeders' Cup horses, Tis the Law, Dennis's Moment, and Independence Hall, not in the Sam F. Davis, but previously. So I would definitely be happy shorting at 8-1, but if you're on board, at least you got a win. And the Sam F. Davis came back pretty strong, so I'm not giving up on Independence Hall just yet. We talk about this in some videos coming out on the Kentucky Derby Channel, Steve. But in the points era, and this is with Maximum Security finishing first. Obviously, it was DQ'd, so it doesn't hold up with Country House. But first across the line in the Derby in the points era, undefeated is a three-year-old, so we're kind of getting really sensitive to losses on the Derby trail, but I thought Independence Hall, given the trip and how the numbers came back, pace and final speed-wise, ran good enough that, maybe next time you get some value if you're a believer. But that was a strong race.
Agreed. And I've expressed all week that Nadal will only go forward from here and wait for the two turn side of things because
right.
as we
yeah,
detailed,
that's what's exciting about 3-year-olds. If you're a believer, you get the two turns and the distance tests, and that makes it fun. And if others are not a believer, there's plenty of reasons to maybe find a reason to back a horse, and I'll use that as my segue to get into the Risen Star, Steve, because I'm not giving up on Scabbard. I was bullish in the LeCompte and disappointed in the favorite, just kind of loped along, but that was off a layoff, second off the layoff now and gets the stretch out, and he's by more than ready, so I'm not concerned there. Just kind of a reverse wedding funeral type of thing. At 12-1 morning line, and we'll see if we actually get that, but I do think we'll get a fair price. The ship emptied pretty quickly. I think he has a number to run back to, and we often see these 3-year-olds off the layoff, second, third off, finally get back to that number, and that would be good enough to contend here. So at a price, I'm willing to run it back on Scabbard in the first division.
I felt like he was sort of the forgotten entity in here, that he was being completely glossed over and the people that had interest in him, if you liked him at two, wait till you see him at three.
So,
yeah, here's your chance. All right.
Yep. And then the second division, I know Dior is a horse I bet in the first future wager, and I'm happy with that at that price. But, 9-5 here, maybe even a little lower. Mailman Money is going to be the key horse. I was there Churchill when he upset the apple cart at 24-1, I believe on single six day. And I remember Brett had another horse that day, so it was a real, like, wow, they really put one over. And I actually asked Brett about it point blank, like, you know, what happened here? 24-1, the other horse took money. And he just said they didn't think this one was ready, but they wanted to get a race because they knew they wanted to, you know, go up the ladder at Fairgrounds if he was who they thought they were, and he was even better, was what he said. So I'll believe that based on what we saw second time out and at a decent price. Certainly willing to play him to win, and he's my key with a new door.
Well, and I mentioned this the other day when we saw that By My Standards had won, and you came back last seen at the Derby, and how about Chester Thomas and Brett Calhoun? They got three in these two races. Everybody's you know, carrying on about Asmussen. Allied, Chester Thomas and Calhoun, the two in this division and the one in the first division. I whoever's doing the legwork, congratulations, because it's a rising star stable, without a doubt.
Now they built a foundation at Ellis and, you know, dipped yep. their toe with Chester from, and clearly, you know, reinvesting back in the industry, which, you know, you always love to see owners wanting to move up that ladder. And it's been fun with him because he likes to party, and often he is the party.
What else we like, Ed?
Yeah, I'll lightning round the other three races I handicapped. El Camino, we know Blaine shipped maybe the stable Star East, but I think he has a puncher's chance at the home base with a journey to freedom. Azel Coast, I have to be against. He's just going to take so much money with Baffert shipping up and Bayerano. So Sacred Rider interests me. He has a couple races certainly fast enough. Is wind shy at times, but think at the price with Azel Coast being in there, you could throw him. And then on the outside, the Stiff and Checkmite, both, I think, I didn't want him to drift in price a little bit from the outside post, but trying to beat the big favorite, those are the other two. You know, I'd look and play the board accordingly. And then a good card tonight at Turfway, led by the Battaglia, is a prep for the Jeff Ruby Stakes. And High Holies just woke up on synth. He just looks to be the fastest of these and could play his way into the Jeff Ruby with the Battaglia win. And then in the trophy, we'll see what we actually get on Anna's Fast. She was 1-2 in the allowance prep for this. She's 3-1 on the morning line with a decent stable mate in there and another decent horse down on the inside. So it's just one of those, have to set a price and stick to it. But certainly at the morning line, I'd play her, but I'd even go as low as 8 or 9 to 5.
Very good. The action at Turfway tonight and the Golden Gate prep, the El Camino Real as well tomorrow. Does that wrap it up, Ed? Is that all your...
That's the quintet, and obviously looking forward to the Southwest on Monday, so we'll tweet our thoughts there. But carry over at Turf Paradise and the Pick 5 tomorrow. Derby preps tonight and tomorrow and Monday. Head on a swivel Valentine's Day weekend.
Yeah, big time, big time. And between multi-race wagers, you know, multi-race, multi-track wagers today and tomorrow that people love, there's a lot happening. Should be a great 4 days. Ed, I appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
You got it. Ed DeRose, everybody, EJXD2. And thanks to Ed. I'll extend it from all the Twins buyers and BrizNet users that utilized Ed's services at Vegas. And also, of course, Ed, as he told you on Friday, if you missed the Friday preview, he went to Rabbit Ride Lie and loved it. They had that dinner function. We didn't have enough time actually to get all the postscripts from everybody's, and when we talked to Nick, wasn't there. It didn't even feel like Vegas without Nick Tamaro. Let's take our last break of the morning. We'll then sprint to the wire with Jay Privman, Nick Tamaro, Marcus Hirsch, and Brian Sanfratello. Weekend preview at the races here on Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.